Flames Unfiltered, your spot for Calgary Flames hockey talk.
Good evening and welcome to another edition of Flames Unfiltered, hosted by Brad Brood and Kyle Lewis. And we are here for an off-season episode of the show. And Kyle, how are you doing tonight?
Good. Just sitting here thinking about the graphics we're going to have to change.
We are changing a bunch of stuff.
Some of the changes and some of the expected changes, but a quiet few weeks though. Very quiet few weeks.
As I was watching the intro, I was thinking the same thing, and I'm thinking, I'm actually going to have time here in a couple of weeks to be doing this, so we'll get it all changed.
Yeah, and before we went on, I had to change my background because I'm like, God, this front and center in this image is gone.
So. Yeah, well, that happens in the off season, but it has been quiet. The last couple of weeks have really been
nothing. Big time.
Nothing.
But that, I mean, that's typical for every team, right? So you always have like that flurry of activity for 3 or 4 days to start free agency and some trades and whatever, and then it absolutely dies for a good month almost.
I swear, like, every GM must, like, after the draft is over, they must have, like, a week of, well, excuse me, after the free agency is over, they must have, like, a week of meetings and just positioning, and then they must all just go take time off.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, and they do. I mean, those guys are on fishing trips and at their cottages and away with their families or whatever. I mean, you think about it, the off season is increasingly short in the world of sports, it would seem.
It just keeps shrinking and shrinking every year. I wonder how Calgarians are doing, the Stampedes in town, how the Liver's doing. You think people are doing okay?
The many friends I have that are there are they're having a good time. See the Instagram stories, talk to him on the phone, FaceTime, whatever. They're. I don't know if the Livers are okay. The rest of them seem to be having a great time, though.
Oh, the Stampede, always a big time in Calgary. And developmental camp was last week. That was some more news that took place. And I heard that Coronado looked very good, and Hanzik has a rocket of a shot. But that's kind of all the news I got out of developmental camp, I guess.
That was pretty, par for the course. Nothing too exciting. People, I think, performing the way they're expected to. No real surprises. I mean, a lot of that's more towards training camp when you have the smaller group of young players there, right? But came and went like it always does.
Some very sad news for us to report is Michael Stone has announced his retirement. He has become, over the past year, a Flames Unfiltered favorite. I don't know. He held a soft spot in both of our hearts just because of the role he had to play and how effective he was at that role. And he is switching roles as he heads to work in the player development section of the Calgary Flames. And
So I, keeping his Game Worn Blasty jersey handy for the show, because I'll use it to dry my tears when we talk about this. It almost feels like we're doing a eulogy, right? Guy retires.
I know.
And kind of unexpectedly too.
It was unexpectedly for me. I thought he'd be back for one more year, and I wanted him to.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, he's your quintessential seventh D, but I mean, the way that he, jumped in as guys were hurt the last couple of years, or absent Shillington being gone when Tanev was hurt in the playoffs. And he scored a lot of goals, getting it six last year, and then all just he had one of the best slap shots I've ever seen. But
well, and it was his placement of his slap shot. It was always like a foot high, so it was perfect tipping. Or if it wasn't tipped, it would go right over the pads. And if the goalie was down in a butterfly, he hit the net, which is
kind of like a '90s throwback. Like he scored a lot of goals. Just like I remember the one against Ottawa during the lockout. Came skated from center ice and just blew it by the goaltender. No screen, no nothing. Just you're not stopping this. Good night. Like,
wasn't it him? It wasn't him. Who scored on Mike Smith in the playoffs from the other end of the rink? It wasn't Stone though.
No.
Who was that?
Stone did score on Mike Smith on his second. I was at that game where Stone scored. His shot was blocked, so he just wound up and shot again and scored in game two against Edmonton. But I can't remember that now.
Yeah, I don't remember.
But the thing that stands out the most about him was just like the like the self-deprecating amount of loyalty he had to the team. He could have easily signed anywhere else. He likely left a few $1 million on the table by not signing somewhere else, always taking these last minute, okay, we'll give you a deal. I mean, and it's a kind of like a, you know, a great redemption story because Flames fans really shit on him when he signed that 3-year deal after he was acquired from Arizona. You know, he had that blood clot.
He went through a lot of things.
Bought out prior to even getting to Calgary. He tore his ACL and a really bad injury against Philly. Like, he just, but he never quit and he never went away and
never complained either.
No, and he's, and you know, for anybody who hasn't watched it, look up if you can find him. Michael Stone interviews, like even this past season, he's absolutely hilarious. A great soundbite, like a reporter's dream.
You know, you think about his career in Calgary, and he was the reason I liked him so much is because I've never in all my time watching hockey seen a player that could be off for 15, 20 games, healthy scratched, not an injury, healthy scratched, 15 games, into the lineup, didn't look like he missed a game.
Yep. Yeah, I remember seeing him in Columbus a few years ago, and he was, you know, stayed out with the extras in morning practice and, you know, stayed out with the conditioning coach, like, on his own. Like, he was the last guy to leave the ice. And he was just all, like, basically just alluded to, always, always ready to go. And that is a hard gig.
Yeah, and he's doing it on a year-to-year basis, which is a hard gig there, too. I mean, yeah. Not, you know, we talk about these guys who get the big money and they get that security blanket, and then they unfortunately play like they have that security blanket. Well, Michael Stone, yeah. If you think about it, he was going like literally year to year for the last, was it 2 or 3 years?
I think it was 3, yep.
And, you know, it was the unknown, and he got a lot of, he was never really, I wouldn't consider him like one of the Calgary Flames fan base whipping boys or anything, but he did take criticism. I think people miscast him as something completely different than what he was, and he was a calming, stay-at-home defensive presence who, you know, was he the quickest to feed? Absolutely not, but I would describe it as rarely got himself out of position, though.
Yeah, he wasn't, you know, he wasn't the guy who was going to go through like a Tanev and suppress chances against or anything, but I mean, he definitely held his own, and I think because he was a highly touted draft pick and was a, you know, had a lot more scoring promise when he was with Arizona, people, you know, thought they'd get more out of him, maybe. As you said, like, the price of acquisition, the price to extend him at the time seemed to be fairly high, but interestingly enough, as soon as he was given opportunity after the blood clot incident, he's scoring goals. I think we should use him on the power play. That shot was absolutely deadly. Like, I felt that we could have got even more than we did, but we should be happy with what we got at the same time.
Absolutely. And so now we have to look for that seventh defenseman. Did we sign
him? Might have already found him. Maybe.
Did we sign
him? I think that's where you're going with
us. Yeah. Did we sign him?
Jordan Esterle. I think so. I read some old scouting reports on him today, looked up his stats, watched some video more so right when he was signed. He's got decent offensive instincts. He's just decent at everything. He actually has a pretty wicked wrist shot, but rarely has the opportunity or time and space to use it. But never drafted, signed by the Oilers out of Michigan, I believe. And then kind of bounced around from Dearborn, which I believe is also where former Flame David Moss hails from. And I think you're right on that. Yeah, a rare David Moss mention on Flames Unfiltered.
The first David Moss mention on Flames
Unfiltered. So, yeah, actually, yeah, I kind of thought just because he's from the Detroit area, he might stick around Detroit as the seventh defenseman, but I'm sure Eisenman would have given him the opportunity. But he sounds excited to come to Calgary, and I've read some reports that suggest he can play in a regular rotation. He can actually eat up around 20 minutes a night, but not for extended periods of time. His play starts to slip, but I guess we'll be the judge of that. But I expect, based on our cap situation and the depth chart, he should have lots of opportunity.
I've got a feeling, you know, when it first happened and the signing happened, me and you did talk about that seventh man. Is this the guy to replace Stone? And it just might be that. But I also look at where we are the cap-wise, and you have a very good point there. He may have to hold a day-to-day spot just so that we can stay under the cap and, you know.
Well, we're one injury away from him being a regular, even if cap wasn't an issue at this point, right? So.
Yeah. So that makes you wonder, like, so if we move Hanifin, right, which is probably going to happen, hasn't happened. Many people are wondering why it hasn't happened, and I think there's a lot of reasons why it hasn't happened. But if Hanifin goes, do we need another defenseman, do you think?
I think Shillington, as I've said before, replaces a lot of what of a lot of Hanifin brings. Not as strong defensively, but...
he might be as strong defensively. It depends on what Shillington we get back.
Yeah, maybe. To me, it's going to come down to a PTO or training camp surprise. Actually, another signing we should mention, at least in passing, Brady Lyle.
Yes.
Very impressive statistics in the AHL and could be a sleeper to maybe make some noise in training camp. So maybe there's an option internally. But to answer your question more pointedly, I think there's room for one more. How do you feel about it?
You know, I didn't think so originally, but then I started looking at it, and I'm like, yeah, we probably could use another one. But then you wonder, like, if we move Hanifin, like, that's basically freeing up cap so that we're compliant.
Yeah.
So we can't bring in somebody with over two or two and a half or right in that range. Caps, you know, so it's a tightrope pack. It's going to be interesting. I mean, we might as well cut to the chase. It's going to be interesting based off what happens with Lindholm and where we go with Lindholm.
Yeah, for those of you who are not watching on YouTube, I just rolled my eyes rather heavily because I have basically run out of patience for that situation.
Okay, so explain to me there, and I have too, but why have you run out of patience? Because we haven't got a response from Lindholm, or are you frustrated at the dollar amounts that are rumored to be offered to Lindholm? Or both?
Well, both, but I'm also frustrated first and foremost by the media coverage and how it's like Frank Saravelli, who has been proven wrong several times recently, but just how the hockey media is like, will he or won't he? The Flames waiting an answer, like you're watching reality TV. It's like, you guys just shut up. Like, all you're doing is making the fan base hate the player or shit on the team for not moving him. And I don't like that. The situation's tense enough as it is, and it's just being overreported. So to me, and then I'm going to throw this back to you because I really want to get your take on this too, but it's overreported. Lindholm is not worth the money that's being batted around, because I'm telling you right now, without Gaudreau and Kachuk as his wingers, he's not a 40-goal scorer. He's not an 85-point player. He's a 60 to 70 point player. He's a good two-way center. He's probably a number one center in this league. Is he in the upper echelon? I don't necessarily think so. Certainly not on the scoring side. So all things told, I'm eager to see it get resolved. But at the same time, it's like the guy has a year left in his deal. He's not an RFA. Like, do you trade him at the deadline? Maybe. Do you sign him sometime during the season? Maybe 3 months into being coached by Ryan Huska, Mark Savard, and that whole crew is like, you know what? I do want to be here. Let's talk some more. Who knows? It's just, why does this have to be resolved right now?
Well, you know, it's the Calgary panic. And, you know, we lose Gaudreau for nothing, right? Mm-hmm. That happens from time to time. There's nothing that Bradford Living could have done any differently. And if anybody in Calgary thinks they could have, I laugh at you. If we would have traded him at deadline, all hell would have broke loose in the city. Yeah. True Living did what he could to what we know. We can't change and make a guy want to play here. So we lose Gaudreau, which is unfortunate, but reality. So Lindholm. So do we automatically assume that that's going to happen with Lindholm? No. But it sure as hell isn't a reason to overpay somebody. And I'm hearing numbers of $8.5 to $9 million per year for 8 years.
That would ruin this franchise.
Those are stupid numbers. Stupid numbers.
Yep.
I was sitting there watering the lawn last night, and I was thinking about Lindholm, and I was thinking about this situation, because I do think this is a situation that needs to be resolved sooner than later. Probably, dare say sooner than the Hanifin situation, because this determines a lot of direction of the team, cap space, what we need pieces of. Here's the deal. If we give him $8.5 to $9 million, we are screwed for a lot of years. I think Lindholm is a good center, like you said, not a great center. And I was thinking as I was watering the lawn last night, my goodness, a little over a calendar year, we were determining whether we found our number one center or not. We were deciding that. And then after a mediocre year, at best to be described, of Lindholm, we're ready to write a $9 million check to this guy? Are we?
Yeah.
Are we crazy?
Yeah, well, it kind of comes back to that whole, and then it gets difficult because the Huberto and Kadri contracts, Markstrom's deal, like they're not allowed to say rebuild. I would sooner go full-blown rebuild than pay him that kind of money.
Well, I'm not a rebuild guy in this situation because I don't think this team has to be completely torn down. I don't think so either,
but I think if you have to choose between the two, I mean, realistically, how competitive of a team are you going to have if you're paying one guy that much money when you have so little to spare, right?
We may be better off if he says, no, I don't want to play in Calgary. We might be better off. Now, okay, are we going to struggle? Because we contradict slightly what we said a couple episodes ago when we said, well, if we lose Lindholm, then we're out searching for a number one center. And I agree with that. But that was under the assumption that we were going to get him for $7 million or under, maybe.
Yeah.
Well, not 8.5 to 9.
Look when the Flames traded Corey Stillman for Kit Conroy. And everybody in those comments with the checking center, Jerome McGinley, chief amongst them. Well, nobody expected Conroy to have a 75-point season, but he did. Mm-hmm. Maybe there's somebody out there we get back in a trade that surprises us and, you know, comes to Calgary and puts up 60 points. Who's going to be upset over that, right? I'm not saying it's likely. I'm not saying I can tell you who I think it might be, but there's possibilities.
I know, and I even, like, really did some research and thought about, like, what would the return be for Hanifin? What would the return be for Lindholm? And sadly, I don't even know where to start. I really don't even know where to start.
No, and I don't really either, quite frankly. I mean, there's lots of things being batted around, you know, first-round pick, roster player. The first-round pick thing was kind of contingent upon the draft, and now that it's passed, it's like that's less appealing to me because this was a very deep draft, right?
We still need a first-line center. So no matter what, whether we get that in return from Hanifin, I mean, you don't get a first-line center. That's the problem. Like, no one's going to trade us a first-line for Lindholm.
No, but maybe you trade Lindholm to a team like Columbus, like we talked about, and you pick up a guy like Sam Reinhart from Florida. Like, there's possibilities of somebody who could become a number one center with the right opportunity. But that's the thing, is that until they're established, nobody knows that's what they are, unless they're, Bedard, McDavid, whatever. But I don't know, man. This is what, you know, we talked earlier, you know, we talked about, you know, putting out a show to talk about the few things that have gone on and remind people that we're still here kind of thing. It's like, this is that time where all you can do is think, because nothing is imminent. There's no reason for something to happen tomorrow. It could, but we're all just in this pattern of like, okay, what happens next? What do we do? What's the return going to be? Who gets traded first? I think you're right in terms of Lindholm should be the first domino to fall, because that's going to set the table for everything else. But do you have any idea yourself what's a deal for Lindholm look like to you?
I don't know.
So in either case, you're saying you're not, like, since, who knows, right?
Since the draft, like, I saw a deal pre-draft, you know what I mean, just with picks and then maybe a player, roster player or two here or there. But now it's like, well, you know, yes, so you say, well, we could make a good old-fashioned hockey trade, but I don't think anybody's gonna give us a trade that, I mean, we're gonna, I guess you get a, we could maybe get a mid-range center and a prospect along with it and then hope that guy overachieves. But either way, like, we're either, if things go like I see it going, we're either going to have an overpriced center in Lindholm, or we're not going to have a first line center, and we're going to be praying that Kadri can fill that role.
Yeah, which messes up the whole rest of your depth chart, right?
Exactly. Because I really don't mind Lindholm, Kadri, Backlund, Dubé as our four centers. I really don't mind that.
Yeah.
Do I see that happening? No, not when there's question marks with Backlund and Lindholm. And quite honestly, a lot of talk this week in Calgary land about where do we go with Dylan Dubé?
Well, that's what I was going to ask you. So the conjecture, the talk out there is that he is, you know, now discussing his next contract with the Flames. So I want to hear your take on that.
Well, you picked him as a breakout player last year, and it didn't look good for you in the early season. He was better in the later part of the season.
Mm-hmm. Which he typically is, based on his history, but he had a good year.
I've always liked Dylan Dubé, but I've always thought that he is not ever going to be offensively what anybody in Calgary dreamed of. And one of the things that bothers me and frustrates me the most is we're doing the same thing we've done in the past, is we're looking at him going, but he's a Calgary kid. He's a Calgary kid. And I like that. But the Calgary kid needs to produce.
actually, funny enough, well, he was born in, he played, I'm trying to, did he move to Calgary when he was young? So he's born in Golden, BC, which isn't far from Calgary anyway.
I just remember hearing that when he was in developmental camp and preseason camp, he lived with his parents.
Right.
So his parents must be in the area.
So it's his birthday in a week from today, in fact. But yeah, highly touted, you know, world junior captain, you know, pretty impressive resume out of junior, but you know, 45 points this year, which is pretty decent, but I think that's basically his ceiling. I don't know that he could have got a lot more opportunity than what he had.
So I'm listening this week to the Fan 960, who I respect those guys a lot, and I like listening to him. I listen to him almost every day. But they were talking numbers. Listen to these numbers. 6 million, 6 years, 6 million. They were talking 4 year, 4 million.
No.
Oh. What?
Nope, not doing it.
Like, I was thinking 3 year, I'll walk him to free agency, I don't care. I was thinking like 3 year, 3.5. And I was stretching then.
I think he's going to be 3.5 as a, you know, 40-some point player. Decent wheels, good penalty killer. I don't think there's any question about that.
Yeah, and I'm probably wrong on that aspect, you know, when you look at the comparables and stuff like that. But I sit and I look at, I look at Andrew Mangiapane, he's getting 5.8. And I think he's grossly overpaid right now. Well, I know, but is he going to? I saw projection up, but last year just stymied that. And I know last year was a one-off, and I'm praying that the page has turned and we're going to see people return to where they should be. Now, I don't think they're going to return to the careers we saw 2 years ago.
No.
But, I mean, if we could meet in the middle there, we'd probably be okay, right?
Well, I would think. The other part of all this, like, you know, I got asked another podcast yesterday about, like, Jonathan Huberdeau and his contract, and it's like, similarly to these other players you're talking about, Dubé or Mangiapane, it's like the market value, even if it's inflated like everything else in the world, that's the value. That's what they cost. You know, I'm not saying I agree with it. I do think those guys are both, well, Mangiapane, especially right now, is overpaid. If he scores 60 points next year, I don't think so.
I hope he proves me totally wrong. I do, and I hate to be negative on those two players, but they did frustrate me last year, along with another handful of guys. Don't get me wrong. And, you know, we can sit and look at Kadri, and we can look at Huberdeau and say, well, they're grossly overpaid too, and I would have to agree with you. But I'm also hoping that, you know, some of these guys that we're talking about are going to return to their pace. Do I think Huberto is going to return to the 115 point pace? Absolutely not. If we got to the 80, I'd be thrilled.
But yeah, of course, absolutely. Wouldn't we all? I'd take 70 some at this point.
You know, and I think he can, and I do believe he will. I really believe that's the guy this year that turns a corner back into the hockey player that he was.
What about Markstrom?
Absolutely.
Wow. Well, there's your playoff team right there.
The guy that I worry the most about is Kadri.
Yeah. I think he's going to be a lot more motivated, though, and he said some really positive things about Calgary again this week.
No, and I'm putting away what I watched last year and my frustrations last year because the situation was toxic. Okay?
Oh, yeah. But top to bottom, start to finish.
So I'm going to, you know, erase these things. But if we're going to sign contracts to Dubé right now, like, we can't overpay. We are in no place as a franchise to overpay for anybody, whether it be Lindholm or Dubé.
Well, I think the other thing, too, is you can't sign those peripheral, forget the phrasing, but peripheral-type players until you sort out the Lindholms and the Hennepins. How do you sign Dubé, then have to trade Lindholm? So what I'm thinking is, okay, if you trade Lindholm first, then you go to Dubé and say, listen, we're going to sign you to a short-term deal because we're going to give you an opportunity to be a number one center or whatever. Show us what you got. We're going to pay you a decent salary this year, and let's see if, you know, we're going to be given more opportunity, right? If you sign Dubé first, it just handcuffs you more in terms of what you can do. Because with the way the depth chart is now, it's not how it's going to be if Lindholm's traded or Hannafin's traded, right? So exactly. I think you got to handle those big fish first. You have to.
And I sit and I look at a guy like Backlund or a guy like Tanev. I am completely fine going to free agency with them. Going to deadline with them.
And that's what I'm going to say. Absolutely. I don't think there's any reason at all to trade those guys when you hit the deadline.
I don't think your return even goes down with those two. I think those two may bring the highest reward at deadline. Because what are playoff teams looking for that are going to make a strong cup run? Solid, steady defense. That's Tanev. They're looking for third line centers that win faceoffs and are defensively responsible. That's Backlund. We're getting returns on
that. Two-way. Backlund can move up. He can play in a power play. Like, Backlund's an up-and-down player, right? So,
and quite honestly, if we lose Backlund for nothing, some people would call that poor asset management. I look at it as, well, we had him for like 9 seasons. We had him. He's the second most. He'll be passing Giordano in games played. Like, we got our money's worth there, did we not?
Well, it's not just that. It's that when he signs his next deal, wherever he signs it, it's not going to be worth whatever they pay him.
Exactly.
I mean, too much money, too much term for a guy who's past his prime. So, I mean, would it be great? No. Do you want to lose a guy like... You don't want to lose any asset for nothing.
No,
but
I don't.
It's not going to kill the team.
No, I just think, you know... And I look at Zadorov, too. He's another guy we're going to have to deal with, whether sooner or later. I don't know that he's not a guy at the deadline that couldn't bring a return. We talked about him pre-deadline this year, that he was a guy that... You never know. He might have, you know, there was talk that he may get traded at the deadline.
Yep. Yeah, definitely a good chance of it. Another guy, you know, big hitting defenseman. He was good in the playoffs for Calgary last year. So the return on all these guys can be very good. They just have to be patient, and that's the tricky part.
I just believe that it's going to have to start with Lindholm and Hanifin. I this team goes nowhere until we determine what happens with those two players.
Yep, absolutely.
A couple other signings we can touch on here quickly. Ben Jones, Emilio Pettersson signed 1-year two-way deals. Both are 24-year-olds, I believe.
Yep.
So they'll slot in as
solid pros.
Wranglers. I don't know. Maybe Ben Jones is a guy that we see as an extra forward this year. I don't know. We'll see what happens there. Another thing I wanted to touch on, Matthew Phillips signs with Washington. I know you're a big Matthew Phillips guy. You're probably mad at me because I just thought, well, let's just turn the page on this because I thought it was just a negative thing from last year. But your thoughts on that signing?
Never should have come to this. And not to say he was going to be an NHL scoring winger necessarily, but he never had a proper opportunity. He followed his coach, Mitch Love, to Washington. I don't blame him for that at all, but... a situation where Craig Conroy is trying to clean up somebody else's mess, and I'm not blaming Brad Treliving because he recalled Phillips. His coach wouldn't use him, so I have no idea what we had in him. I have an idea that he was going to be a decent, maybe 40-50 point winger in the NHL, but it's a one-way deal.
It's a one-way deal, and it was reported that Calgary offered him a 2-year deal to stay.
Yeah, but I don't know. A two-way, 1-year, one. One way, year two.
Uh-huh. Big difference.
And he had nothing else to prove in the AHL. So why would he take that deal?
Yeah. I'm interested to see where he fits in Washington. And if he does produce like many Calgary Flames fans think he will. I was a naysayer. And by golly, I heard good things about this kid. And if I'm wrong, I'm wrong. And I'll admit it. I do wish him well. I listened to a really good interview with him last weekend when I was driving, and I wish this guy the best, and I'm interested to see where he fits in Washington. I really am.
No, we all are. And we're all going to be cheering for him too. So some people seem to think he's going to be the next Martin St-Louis, and because that's a Calgary connection, I don't see that at all, but I'm not going to be surprised if he's a scoring winger in the NHL.
Yeah. He definitely could be. Looking at our depth chart, if we had to re-sign him, does he fit in? I don't think he fits in. I mean, does he play instead of Coronado this year? I don't know.
Decent chance. Would have been a hell of a fight. And I think Coronado's basically being gifted a job now. It's his to lose. And I guess he was really good at development camp too. So watch for him in training camp.
So when you look at the depth chart, right? If Coronado had to play in the top six to start the year, would you feel comfortable with that?
Yeah, if he earned it. I know you're not. I can tell by the look on your face.
God, am I that old school that I just... I mean...
You kind of are.
I am. I want him...
But you'll admit when you're wrong. You know, yeah, and I wear that.
I've had to admit a couple times this year.
And I've never seen you close the door on it so much as be skeptical. Some people are like, no, we can't. You've never been like that. So
no, you know what? If I was like, I'm a normal guy that I probably wrote out depth charts probably 15 times this last 15 days for the Flames for next year. And every time I do it, I go, does he fill that second line center spot for us? I don't know. I've thought of it 100 times and I want to say yes, because boy, it would solve a lot of problems for us. It really would. It'd really solve a problem if he could fill the first line, because he's a right-handed shot and we don't have any of them. And we need a guy to replace Toffoli, and I don't know, it'd be a great spot for him. I just don't know that you can put the pressure of throwing him out on a first line minutes against top end players as a rookie. Oh boy. I don't want to create a problem.
They did it with Sean Monahan, and I mean, Carnotta would have a lot more support in Calgary than the team that Monahan joined in 2013. So,
but Monahan's a bigger body, though, or am I?
Yeah, he is, but it's also center versus wing in terms of Carnotta. There's a lot of reasons it's not the worst idea if he shows well in camp. I mean, give the guy an opportunity.
Why wouldn't it solve a lot of problems in Calgary if he just stepped up right into that role?
If he steps up and as a rookie puts up 40 to 50 points, how can you not be happy with that?
Oh yeah. I hope so.
I can see it.
I hope so.
That is one game against San Jose, but he was flying.
I thought he was really good. He had two chances to score, one grade A chance that I thought was going to go in, but didn't. And
yeah. I don't know. Yeah. We've all had those, right?
Yes, we have. One other thing I wanted to talk about too, before we put a wrap on summer edition of Flames Unfiltered, is goalies. We've talked about it a ton. We got to see Wolf in the final game of the year, and I was impressed. I don't judge it off of that game. I'm judging it off what I watch in the American Hockey League, where he's done everything he possibly can.
Yep.
Where do we go with this? What do you think? I guess this is a better question for you, Cal. What do you think Craig Conroy wants to do with this situation?
I think that he wants to find a good trade for Dan Vladar. Failing that, he's going to go into the season with basically three goaltenders. What do you think he wants out of this, or his hope is?
I think his heart wants Vladar to be traded and have Wolf and Markstrom run the course. But I think his brain is more, do I dare trade our security blanket and net? And the reason I say that is there was a lot of instances last year where teams were into their third goalie.
Yep.
We were very, very fortunate. I love Dan Vladar.
If we both weren't so bad.
We probably would have been better off going into our third goalie, but...
Well, the third, let's say if he gets traded, your third goalie is Oscar Dansk,
who's played some NHL games. I'm fine with that.
Doesn't bother me any.
No, me either. But I sit and I look and I wonder, and I'm like, people need to lay off Jacob Markstrom. I think he's going to have a real, real good bounce back here. I do believe that. Yep. I think Dustin Wolf can jump right in and take off and be real good, and both of those can complement each other. But I still am not giving up on Dan Vladar. I've been really impressed. He had a 2-week stint where I was not impressed. But, I mean, come on. I mean, we've had a lot of goalies that have way longer stints that we still had faith in them. I don't know. I think that Dan Vladar is a good asset for this organization. I do.
He is. I mean, there's a lot of teams, like I mentioned, Columbus, that are looking for a goaltender. I talked to one team who basically indicated that their interest was in a goaltender who could go up and down, you know, maybe like an Alex Stalock type, right? So the goaltending market's always going to be fickle. I think that if you do end up trading Vladar for a decent return, there's another goalie out there you can sign to a two-way deal to tandem with Oscar Dansk who can come up on a bench, right?
See, one thing that's going to happen, though, too, is like anybody that trades for Vladar, or if Calgary keeps him, you know, he's not waiver exempt. I mean, he's going to have to clear waivers, and I don't think he will.
No.
So, can't see it. I mean, the only thing you can really do in Calgary is, and this is a benefit here of having the Wranglers right with us, is that we can send Wolf down and bring him up the day of, as long as we have enough cap space, play, and go back down.
Yep. Oh, he'll be up and down all year if Vladar stays, I think.
But you got to get Vladar games, or you're killing your asset.
Yeah, but I think we're going to know in training camp, because you got to remember too, in training camp, there's going to be all the PTOs to be done, the trades that will have happened. If you can hang on to Vladar till training camp and say if a goalie, you know, tears his ACL in camp or something, God forbid, there's your opening.
Yeah.
All of a sudden his value's through the roof, just the turn of a dime, right?
Do you feel that he's the next goalie to go? Is he like a goalie that teams are seeking out? A good price tag,
not
I think.
Yet, because they're all pretty well set, but I think teams like Chicago, Columbus, maybe a Buffalo, there's a fit for him somewhere, just hasn't made itself apparent yet.
I know.
You're looking for a goaltender with some potential in the league, who else do you look at that's available?
I mean, he definitely has potential. See, he's one of the few goalies. A lot of these teams are nabbing up these goalies that really don't have upside potential to be a starter, where Dan Vladar is a guy that could actually, in the right situation, step in and turn into a starting goalie for a team.
Maybe so. We shall see. This is the dog days of summer, right? All we can do is ask the questions.
I don't know. I'm interested to see how that goes, because the people of Calgary are screaming for Wolf, and I don't know. I'm interested to see how that
one. Well, they're desperate for some hope, because last season we had none, right? So
why are we so, and it's not just Calgary, and it's, why are we so, why do we feel like the young kids are the answer?
Because we never, ever, ever, ever give them a chance. And we keep trying the same thing over and over and over again with over-the-hill veterans?
Well, that's only been the case the last 3 years, 4 years.
Oh, they did it for like Tony Amani, Owen Nolan. Like, I get what they were trying.
Yeah, you know? I know.
Like, there's just...
You remember when they traded for Owen Nolan? I was so excited.
They trade for him or sign him? They must have signed him.
Did they sign him?
Yeah, then they had to get him and Robin Regier to make up, because Robin Regier injured his back when Owen Nolan was in Toronto, and yeah, it was a whole big thing. I think I might have bought him a truck actually to make up for that. There's some kind of a story there. Anyway, it's just like, but yeah, I mean, when's the last time there was a young kid in Calgary who was like, okay, we're gonna give this guy a chance? The team's just not good at it, right?
Andrew Mangiapane.
Yeah, he had to work his ass off to earn it, which I guess is what you want. But at the same time, no, but you got to have jobs open. That's what Craig Conner was saying. You have to have more openings so there's more competition.
I think there's openings this year.
What's that?
I think there's openings.
There is, and there needs to be.
I think Walker Dewar's pretty much cemented his spot in the fourth line.
God, I hope so.
Adam Ruziska's finally going to get his spot. My God, we need to get him to do something, though.
You're so hard on him.
He's lazy.
Yeah,
well, I hate saying that, because this is the NHL.
When you're lazy, a taskmaster coach is not the answer for you.
Do you know something that's weird? I was thinking about him this week. Do you know that when Sutter had him in the top six, he produced? And as soon as he went out of the top six, I don't know if it's a mental thing in his head, boom, worthless.
Well, less skilled players, miscast. He's an offensive player, right? That's one thing Sutter was terrible at. He'd let you play, but he put you in the fourth line. Well, guys like that don't belong in the fourth line.
But do you want him in our top six?
Maybe. Never saw enough of it. It looked good when it happened.
You're right. We didn't. But would you rather have him in the top six than Jacob Peltier?
We'll see what happens in camp. I like Peltier on a checking line, too, because he's a good two-way
player. I know. I think Peltier on the third line would be really good.
Backlund and Como, that'd be a great line.
Wouldn't that be good?
Yeah. We may end up seeing it.
We might. Connor Zeri get a spot this year? Yeah.
He'll get some games in. I don't think he gets a spot.
Yeah, I don't think so either.
Yeah, he's not quite there. He's getting close, though.
Lots to be determined as we roll through the summer, and I think I agree with you. Lindholm and Hanifin have to happen, and from there, things will just fall into place.
I hope so. I mean, I expect we're going to have some news in the next few weeks. By the first week of August, something will have happened, I'm feeling. What that is yet, I don't know, but I hope, like you said, it's one of the bigger dominoes. We're going to have a whole lot to talk about.
I am just so afraid that Hanifin goes and our return isn't what we think it's going to be. And I don't know. I'm not overthinking the return on this. I'm really not. I don't know. With the way the cap is now and how teams are so strapped, I don't even know how trades are going to happen.
I wish I had the answer. I'd rub my crystal ball, but I forgot it.
I don't know. Should be interesting. will be back. What are we thinking, Kyle? A couple weeks here? End of July? I would say about
end of July, first week of August, right in there. Well, I mean, there's going to be some things happen in the league that will affect the Flames at the week's end, so.
Yeah. Summer continues. Enjoy it. And then the end of July, we'll be back, and we'll have a lot more things to discuss, I think. And if something big does happen, Kyle and I will be there with a quick episode to break down a trade, or I guess
that's... Or a lengthy one. Could be a big trade. Who knows?
Wouldn't that be fun? Like last year? Boy, it was...
Oh, that was wild.
That's a summer to remember, but some of it turned into a little bit of a nightmare. But I still think that trade's going to pay off, though. I still do.
I do, too. Got to be hopeful.
All right, Flames fans, have a good summer, and you will hear from Kyle and I real soon. End of July is our next show. Enjoy the Stampede. Have a good time.
Take it easy.
Connected. Flames Unfiltered can be found on Twitter at Flame Unfiltered. Check out the Facebook page at Flames Unfiltered. Host Brad Brood is on Twitter at Brad Brood, and host Kyle Lewis is on Twitter at VanLewis14. Like what you hear? Rate, review, and subscribe on Apple Podcasts. Flames Unfiltered can be found on all the major podcast players. Want to watch the show? You got it. Check out Inside Edge Hockey Media Group for every show. Subscribe while you watch. Thanks for listening, watching, and interacting. Enjoy the hockey action.
The win column, playoff! Yeah, baby! Playoff! Yeah, baby!
Thanks for tuning in to Flames Unfiltered. Check back for more action-packed Calgary Flames talk. This episode of Flames Unfiltered was copyrighted and produced by Inside Edge Hockey Media Group.